Hello and welcome to the Keep a Cup podcast. Chad Young and Pete Ball here with you. Episode 151. We're going to spend most of this episode repeating an exercise we did last week, but on the other side of the other side of the diamond, the other side of the ball. I feel like in football, basketball, I suppose, like the other side of the ball, baseball. I don't know. Seems weird. Last week, we talked about pitchers who had made big improvements this year. This week, we're going to talk about hitters. Is that the other side of the ball? I guess. What do you say, Pete? Is there a better phrase than that?
I was going to say the opposite side of the dugout. Nope, that doesn't work either. That doesn't make any sense. Yeah, we're just gonna go with that.
Yeah, whatever. Anyways, since it is episode 151, we will take a look at jersey number 51. And this is a weird jersey number because for like most organizations, like a lot of times with these numbers, like the early numbers, you know, you go to a number like, I don't know, 7, something like that. You're like, every organization has somebody who wore that number that is interesting, right? They might not be a Hall of Fame or whatever, but they're interesting. 51, I feel like most orgs are like, yeah, this number's meaningless. There's nobody associated with it who matters. And then you have the Seattle Mariners who probably need to retire this number twice because yeah, two seriously. Of the most important players in org history, Randy Johnson and Ichiro Suzuki, both wore 51 during their years in Seattle. So I don't know. Other than those two, there's just not a lot. You got Bernie Williams, Willis McGee, Trevor Hoffman.
You have this one single year from Chris Sale. Where do you get pitchers like that? I would hate to be paying most of that guy's contract and get back a guy who's barely played this year. So maybe it's the Chris Sale episode. He has dominated in that uniform as well.
I didn't even realize he was wearing number 51 this year.
I didn't either. Huh. Try to block it out of my,
yeah, I was looking through this, like, there's just, it just doesn't go real deep. So I don't know. I could give it to Sale. Sale's been wonderful for at least one of my fantasy teams. So, you know, I'm good with that. We probably did either Ichiro or Randy Johnson in episode 51. So for 151, we can give it to Sale. 1 year, that's all it takes.
Oh, that's so sad, but yeah.
So I'm going to use that as a perfect transition into my head-to-head heroes because I'm cheating this week, and I'm doing two. They are teammates. They are teammates of Chris Sale's. And Matt Olson in the last 7 days, as we record this on Saturday the 21st, Matt Olson last 7 days, 3 home runs, 6 runs, 12 RBIs, a .364 average, and a his on-base percentage in this stretch is .548. That's pretty good. And his teammate, Michael Harris, 4 home runs, 9 runs, 7 RBIs. He's added a stolen base. He's hitting .355 with a .400 on base percentage. And, you know, these aren't like unheard of guys. I'm not, I didn't discover either of these two, but both of them were not helping your teams, were probably actively hurting your teams for much of the year. They are back. They're back in a big way. They really have been for a little while, at least Olson for most of the second half, Harris for the last couple of weeks. And I think it's, for me, I think these guys, I'm very, very curious in the offseason to see how far their stock falls based on this season. And I suspect I'll be buying at their new price.
Yeah, I will too. Michael Harris had a lot of helium going into the season. I mean, obviously Olson did well as well. He was coming off an amazing season, but Harris was really climbing, looking like he was going to take that next step this year, dealt with injuries. I'll be buying both of these guys in drafts. I think we'll get Olson at a good discount. There's been so many good first basemen this year. It feels like guys who are going to move up ahead of him on the board. At the very least, Vlad Jr., who, you know, I wouldn't be shocked if Olson comes close to the power numbers that Vlad Jr. puts up, if not passes in 2025. So definitely interested in Olson next year. And Harris, yeah, of course, good power speed combo.
Yeah, I mean, I thought this was the year that Harris was going to get to 2020. He's stolen 20 bases each of the last two seasons with 19 and 18 home runs. And he just hasn't gotten to a full season worth of plate appearances. And that's going to be the issue again this year. He's going to end up right around that same. He'll probably get to 17 home runs, 16, 17. He's at 15 now. So he'll get close to that 18 again. But he's only stolen 9 bases. I expect expect that to increase, except he's stolen 9 bases and been caught 6 times. So that is my one sort of cause for concern here. But I'm a Harris fan. I'm still a Harris fan. I like seeing him turn things around. So, yeah, we'll see where it goes. What about you? Who's your head-to-head hero for the week?
Yeah, so in a similar vein, I wanted to go with Corbin Carroll or Julio Rodriguez. And, you know, a similar vein in that players who we had a lot of high hopes for going into the season and kind of disappointed this year, although Corbin Carroll, I think you make the case, is not really disappointed. I mean, he's disappointed, but not exactly disappointed. Anyway, Julio Rodriguez has been better over the last 7 days, so I'm going to go with him. His season has been a weird one. There's no question if you drafted him this year that you're disappointed with what you got, but he had a high ankle sprain. He was dealt a high ankle sprain on July 21st and came back really quickly. And I mean, I don't know if he has said anything. Maybe I'm looking for answers where there's really not any, and he was just performing poorly. But after that high ankle sprain, he was brutal in August. He hit .234 for the month. He only had 2 homers, but it looks like he's getting healthy because he is having an excellent September. In the month, he's batting .321 with 5 homers. That would already be the most homer filled individual month for him this season. And we obviously still have 9 or 10 days to go here. So Julio Rodriguez and Corbin Carroll are earning back their, you know, first, second round status. That's a conversation for another day, you know, exactly where we're going to take them. But it's nice to see these two studs reemerging as studs down the stretch.
Yeah, I mean, all 4 of those guys are just going to be fascinating conversations in the offseason because they were all, maybe not first round picks, but first couple rounds, and have not been close to that value. So it'll be fascinating. It'll be fascinating. But we are going to get into our improved hitters conversation. So last week we did this with pitchers. I'll give the same caveat I did last week. I used Fangraphs points as sort of a shorthand for improvement here, a way to sort of measure the statistical improvement. But this applies to any format, so don't let that bother you. Last week we went through 21 pitchers. This list of hitters has 30 names, Pete. And we're going to do the same thing we did last week. We're going to go through all of them. And we are going to commit to them being a buy high or a sell high. I will give their stats as well as their median salary in Auto New. We're going to try to group some of these guys together so we aren't spending forever on each one of these 30 players. But just to give you a little bit more context while I put this together, all of these players are either over 5.2 points per game this year after being under 5 last year. We'll start with this. All these players were under 5 points per game last year. So there are some guys, some honorable mentions, I would say, like Brent Rooker, Christian Yelich, Vlad Guerrero Jr., who had huge improvements this year, but were already good last year. And yeah, we can have a conversation about, like, you know, is Rooker great or merely very, very good, but I'm not sure we need to right now. That's not the conversation we're gonna have today. So there are some guys who get left off because of that. So all these guys were under 5 points per game last year. They are either over 5.2 this year and gained at least 0.45 points, 0.45 instead of 0.5, because Matt Wallner gained 0.48 and I wanted him to be on the list. So, or they're over 5 this year and gained at least 1 point. Right, so that makes sense. So, like, there's a couple of guys, and we'll get to them pretty early, who are at like 5.05. They didn't quite make that 5.2 cutoff, but I thought were worth including. 3 guys who meet these metrics but are left out are Nathan Lukes, Alex Call, and Matthew Batten. All 3 of them, 29 years old. All 3 of them, not much track record. They have less than 200 plate appearances combined. I think Batten has 3 plate appearances or something like that. Like, and I just was like, yeah, we don't need to talk about that. I'm leaving them off. Any listeners who are out there right now, like, but I was really looking for your feedback on Alex Call or Matthew Batten, you hit me up on Twitter. I'll do my best. But the rest of these 30 names are actually, now that I think about it, I cut it down to 29. There was one person on here who didn't quite make that cut. It's 29 names. And we're going to start right at the top with 3 guys I'm going to combine. Jackson Churio, Jackson Merrill, James Wood. Churio at 5.05, Merrill 5.28, Wood at 5.33. Obviously, none of them played last year, so those are all up from zero, I guess. Churio, $6 median salary. Merrill, $3. Wood, $4. And I'm combining these guys because these are all pretty elite prospects who are performing really well. And I suppose, Pete, there's a possibility you're going to tell me that one of these guys is a sell high for you, that you just don't buy into it, and you're going to get rid of them now while you still can. But I mean, these all just seem like young stars on the way up.
Yeah, no, I'm not selling high on any of these guys. I would buy high on all of them. I do have Churio and Jackson Merrill slightly, maybe not just slightly, but well above James Wood at this point. I'm not here to tell you who has the highest ceiling. I think that's like an impossible thing to measure at this point. But with a strikeout rate hovering around 30%, I think that does, you know, knock James Wood a little bit, particularly because Jackson Merrill and Jackson Churio are actually above average strikeout guys, particularly Jackson Merrill, who's only striking out 17.5% of the time.
Yeah.
Churio in the second half here has also just been on absolute fire. He already has a 21-21 season under his belt. So I love all three. I'd love to have all three, but even though we lumped them together, I do think it's worth clarifying, at least for me, and you might feel differently, I have Churio and Merrill both above Wood.
Yeah, interesting. If we're going to go that route, I think Wood has the higher upside of well, maybe not than Churio. I think Merrill at some level is what he is. Like, I think he's so advanced in his approach that I'm not sure he has as much ground to gain as the other two do. For Churio, I think he's making those gains already. Like, the difference between what he was doing earlier this year and what he's doing now is night and day. For Wood, I think they're still to come. And so I think, you know, maybe the more accurate thing to say is I think that long-term Merrill is I'm least excited about him, but I feel pretty secure in what he's doing. Like, I would buy high. I think he is what he is. I think he's legit. I just think the other two have another gear that they could reach.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I, you know, I wouldn't push back on someone saying James Wood has a higher ceiling than Jackson Merrill. I think that's fine. But in addition to the strikeout rate, and I didn't even know this until I just looked at the page, James Wood has been thrown out 8 times in 22 attempts. Like that's another thing where, like, you know, Merrill's only been thrown out 3 times in 19 attempts. It's a pretty big difference. So for fantasy, for at least next year, I think I would prefer Merrill. But sure, long term, if you'd rather Wood, I think all these guys are great. So I'm not going to fight that.
Yeah. No, and that's at the end of the day, like, this is not a like go get Wood and get out of the Merrill business. Wait, no, they're all awesome. Another rookie who is, last I looked, he was at 7.03 points per game. He's already doubled and homered today, so that's going to go up. It's only 26 total plate appearances. I was going to leave him off because the sample size was so small, but Luis Angel Acuna is absolutely setting the world on fire since coming up for the Mets. The Mets, it's like, Lindor is hurt. You're screwed. What are you going to do? And Luis Angel Acuna is like, we're going to get better. I'm just going to be better than Lindor's been. I don't believe he's actually better than Francisco Lindor, but after that homer and double today, he's up to a 250 WRC plus in this limited sample. So, yeah, I was sort of down on him. He was great in double A last year until he went to the Mets, and then he stunk. And then he stunk in triple A this year. And now he's just like, I mean, he has 3 home runs in 26 plate appearances in the majors. He had 7 home runs in 587 triple A plate appearances. Like, I don't know. What are your thoughts on Luis Angel Acuna?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's obviously very early, and like you said, there's nothing you can really draw just on the small sample size. He was kind of disappointing in the minors this year. At the same time, you know, he was a top 50 ish prospect.
Yeah.
He's young, he's exciting, he's clearly very athletic, super fast. So I'm not necessarily out on him. I think he's a great case of like stick to your guns, because I had him, I think it was the listener league. So if this is a listener, I'm not making fun of you. I'm actually making fun of myself, where like I had him in the keeper cut listener league and I like offered to him in a trade, and the response was something like, you know, thanks for the offer. I think Luis Angel Acuna is going to have like no value in this format. And then I really got thinking about it. I'm like, maybe this guy really knows his stuff. And much later, I had to make a cut and I cut him. And now I'm like pissed about that. So I still have him in the Podcasters League. I think he's going to be useful. We'll see if he can continue this hot streak into next season. But man, is he really doing things to his draft value? I actually feel bad for people that liked Luis Angel Acuña going into next year because now you got to pay.
Yeah. Are you going to pay? Are you buying high or are you going to sell high?
Buy high. Just, you know, I'm okay buying high. I guess I would need to, and this is cheating. This is what we said we're not going to do. I would need to know the price, but man, a $2 Luis Angel Acuña, the way things look right now, I'm buying it. I'm buying high. That's my definitive answer.
I think I'm going to put that down too. I think that the caveat to that for me is I think that his poor performance in the minors this year is going to bubble up in off-season conversation. And I think it's not going to be like, it won't just be like, oh my God, he had 50 plate appearances and they were insane. It'll be, I don't know how much I believe that. I think that'll be the common sentiment out there and that'll allow me to buy high. And I'm with you that as bad as his time this year was, like, this was a legit prospect. And there's reason to believe that, you know, maybe not that he's going to be as good as he's been for the last week, because that's insane and he's not, but that he can be better than his minor league numbers this year suggest. So yeah, I'm with you. Now we've gotten through some guys sort of quickly. Actually, I'm gonna do one other that I think is a relatively quick one. This guy came up last year as a rookie, 4.92 points per game. Very good, but you know, under five, not great. He is up to 6.2 points per game this year. That is Ellie De La Cruz. Ellie has an $11 median salary. Is he off to the races now? Is this just who he is?
Yeah, I mean, I'm tired of criticizing Ellie De La Cruz. He's having a top five fantasy season with a 31% strikeout rate. So, like, when you hit the ball that hard and you're that fast and you play that much in Cincinnati, I'm actually okay with a bad strikeout rate. And so, in my eyes, it can only go up from here. I don't expect the strikeout rate to get worse. So, I mean, the guy could finish 30-70 this year. Like, yeah, I'm going to buy high on that.
Yeah, I think the big thing for me with Ellie is that, like, I look at the other numbers and 19% home run per fly ball rate doesn't really concern me. I'm not looking at that thing like, oh, he can't maintain that. A 359 BABIP is probably higher than he can maintain, but he's going to run a high BABIP. So if you told me it went down from 359 to 340, 345 maybe, like, okay, that's fine. And that will impact his value, but not nearly to the point that would make me want to sell high. It all looks pretty good. I do think the numbers are going to come down a little bit next year because I think that BABIP will come down, but that assumes that he doesn't make some sort of strides with his plate discipline. Mm-hmm. And last year to this year, he's chasing 6% less, 35.3% O swing last year, 29.1 this year. He's slightly increased his Z swing from 61 to 61.7. He is making less contact, which is a little concerning, but he's making pitchers come to him more because he's chasing less. And so that is helping. I just wouldn't put it past him to, like, you know, take another step in his chase rate, maybe improve his contact. Like, maybe last offseason it was about discipline and this offseason it's about contact for him. I think without improvements to his strikeout rate, the numbers are going to come down because that BABIP's going to come down. But I wouldn't put it past him to have improvements in that strikeout rate. He has pretty consistently in the minors, you know, flashed high number and then brought it back down, and we'll see. We'll see. But yeah, I would also put him as a buy high, not a sell high. All right. Now get into some, I think, more challenging names. We're going to start off with a guy who honestly is barely on my radar and is now in the minors again. And that is Adrian Del Castillo. Del Castillo got a shot in Arizona because Gabriel Moreno was hurt. Del Castillo, a rookie also, didn't do anything last year. 5.29 points per game as a $2 median salary catcher is some insane value. I will say this. I'll start with this. I'm guessing, in fact, that he won't have much value because I don't think he'll have a job next year is what I think it comes down to. He's going to be the backup catcher, if anything, in Arizona, unless they make some sort of trade, which I don't expect. And if he does have a job, I am selling high. He has a worse strikeout rate than Ellie. He doesn't walk as much. He has a 438 BABIP in his 87 plate appearances. I'm not buying it. I'm not.
Yeah, I'm not either looking at his numbers. I'm curious, like, if you just took away that first week where he, you know, couldn't swing and miss and was unbelievable, how bad would these numbers look? Strikeout rate north of 32%. And, you know, maybe the most important thing here is what you just said. He's probably not going to have a job. So sell high on, and I don't think he really can, but if you can, sell high on Adrian Del Castillo.
Yeah, I mean, I think if he gets a job, right, if the either the Diamondbacks decide they really believe in him and trade Moreno, or somebody else trades for him, and it's like, oh, wow, he's going to be someone's number one catcher, or even someone's, you know, 1A, 1B kind of splitting time catcher, I would, and you have him, then see if you can shop him. But yeah, I think the most likely scenario is he's looking at 40 games backing up Moreno next year, and that's not exciting anyway. So let's do a guy who got traded already. So we're just saying maybe he'll get traded. Well, a guy who got traded already, Connor Norby, another rookie, 5.42 points per game this year, $3 median salary. He, you know, if he, in his time with the Orioles, he showed some stuff, but he was pretty bad overall. He's been terrific with Miami. That is where all of that, you know, points per game has come from, but a 371 WOBA in 121 plate appearances with Miami. He's got 6 home runs, which puts him at like a roughly, if you assumed he got full-time playing time, 30 home run pace. He's stolen 3 bases. So you're talking about, you know, maybe doesn't get full-time playing time, but a 25-12 kind of season. If you pace this out to more or less a full season, that's pretty good, Pete.
Yeah, I could see him definitely being a useful middle infielder late, but he's been a little weird since he got to Miami. He's been a little bit feast or famine. I mean, he had that stretch with the home runs. He had a 2 home run game, and they went on a 1-for-19 with 10 strikeout stretch shortly after that against pitching that really wasn't that impressive. So, you know, he still has his warts to iron out, and I think it's kind of funny, these last two players we've talked about, Connor Norby and Adrian Del Castillo, who, you know, have just very recently debuted, are both 24 years old. Eli De La Cruz is 22. And so I just to like somehow circle back to him here, same age as the number one overall pick in this year's draft, Travis Pezzana. So like I still in on Eli 2 players later here. But Norby, it should be a little bit more polished. I'm a little disheartened by the strikeout rate so far, but you're right. He's shown flashes in Miami. He's been a little feast or famine, and the feasts have been good.
Yeah. I think, for me, and I went back and forth this one, you're calling him a sell high. I think he's a buy. I think his minor league track record is so good.
Yes.
And I think he does have to make some strides on that strikeout rate. And that is a little bit concerning because, like, you know, his strikeout rate was bad in his time with Baltimore. It was bad in his time in AAA with Baltimore. It was bad in his time in AAA with Miami. And it hasn't been good in the majors. So, yeah, but if you go back historically, he had a very high strikeout rate in 24 plate appearances in the Complex League in 2021. But his first taste of A-ball, 22% strikeout rate at age 21. In 2022, he gets to high A and double A. His strikeout rates in those two levels are 23.9 and 19.9. Then he gets a quick taste, 42 plate appearances in AAA, and it's 11.9%. And in his full season of AAA last year, it was 21.6. So he's got a track record that suggests that a 30% strikeout rate is too high, higher than it should be. And I think if he can pull that down to 25%, it could get interesting. But this is another guy where I think it comes down to what you think his price is going to be, because I'm saying buy high because I think a lot of people are turned off by a lot of what they see. And the way I hear people talking about him is bench fodder for a fantasy team. And I think he can be your starting middle infielder.
Yeah, he totally could, especially in a categories league.
Yeah. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll jump to the Bay Area. Got a couple of Bay Area names to talk about. Welcome back to the Keeper Cup podcast. Chad Young and Pete Ball here. We are discussing hitters who have made big improvements this year based on their auto new points per game, but applying to all formats. And we're telling you if they are a buy high or a sell high. Said we're going to go to the Bay Area. I got two Bay Area outfielders. Let's talk about them together, even though I don't think they really belong together. But we're going to do it anyways. Elliot Ramos, Lawrence Butler. Now, Butler's gotten more of the press lately. He was 2.07 points per game last year. He's at 5.14 this year. That's a 3.08 point gain. That's great. Ramos was only 1.32 last year and is up to 5.52 this year. So he has been better than Butler overall this year. They are both $4 median salary. And yeah, are you buying high or selling high?
I'm going to buy high on both, particularly because they're both outfielders, and that's been a difficult position to navigate for about a year now. But I like both. Lawrence Butler has shown significant strides with his plate discipline in particular. He slashed his strikeout rate by about 5 percentage points, and he more than doubled his walk rate. The average exit velocity looks really good. Barrel rate around 12%. And you can essentially say a lot of the same stuff about Elliot Ramos, who caught the strikeout rate, increased the walk rate, although not quite as much. His barrel rate is a ridiculous, even with that kind of slump he had. Remember, he got really hot. People were picking him up, and then he slumped for a little bit. Even with that slump, the barrel rate is 15.4% this season. That is absurd, with an excellent average exit velocity to back it up. So I'm definitely in on both. And Lawrence Butler playing in, what is it, Sacramento next year? Hopefully that's a lot more exciting than what he's got going on in Oakland. It'd be hard to imagine it being worse.
Yeah, I mean, Ramos with the first ever right-handed splash hit home run. How could you not buy high on that? Here's my thing. I want to buy high on both of these guys. I'm going to call Butler a sell high. And I'm going to do it not because I dislike Butler or because I don't recognize what you're saying about the park change or anything like that. I just think, at least in the circles that I'm in, the hype machine on Butler is insane, right? He had that, like, you know, 3 home run game. He had like 5 home runs in 2 games. So like, he's just gone on some insane streaks. And I think if I could sell Ramos for what I think I could sell Butler for, I would probably say I'm a sell high on Ramos as well. I just think the hype train on Butler it's gone too far. It's gone too far. He's streaky. He's super streaky. He has, for extended periods of time this year, had no business being in a major league lineup. None whatsoever. Like, one of the worst hitters in baseball for, you know, weeks on end. And then he'll spend, you know, 2 weeks being just insanely good, right? Like, you know, he spends 2 weeks making Aaron Judge look bad, and then a month making, I don't know, Lenin Sosa look good or something. I don't know. I can't even think of who.
That works.
And so, like, even recently, like, we were talking about how he was red hot end of August into September. Since September 8th, totally random day, we're talking about roughly 2 weeks. It'd be 2 weeks including today, I guess. He has a 96 WRC plus, 296 WOBA. He's got 1 home run, 3 stolen bases in that time. It's not like he's, you know, killing you. This isn't like when he had a WRC plus of 12 for a month or something like that. But he cools off. And when he cools off, he struggles. He strikes out a lot. He doesn't make great contact. And then he'll get hot again. But I think that's just going to be the story for him. And because I don't see that leveling out, like, I don't think that's going to level out to the point that he is at his peak at all times, or even long enough to really raise himself up from to the heights that people seem to think he's at. And so I'm calling him a sell high, not because I think he isn't good and fun and exciting, not because he's not a guy I don't want. Like, if I have a $4 Lawrence Butler, I'm happy to hold on to him. I just think I think there's an audience out there that thinks he's like a $40 outfielder, and I don't.
That's fair, and not that this should really factor into people's decision-making, but it is Oakland, and like, how much of Lawrence Butler's success has come because one of the best players in baseball this season, you mentioned him earlier, Brent Rooker, has been in that lineup right next to him. And like, do we expect Brent Rooker to be with the A's next year? Maybe. I don't know. But he was a pretty heavily rumored guy around the trade deadline. And his value is probably, for a major league club, never going to be higher than it is right this moment. So if they decide to cash in and they lose another big piece out of that lineup, I wouldn't be surprised if Butler's numbers take a hit. I'm gonna bank on Butler being useful, though, and I'll buy high on both.
Sounds good. Back to Miami. We talked about Norby before. Xavier Edwards, his teammate, 3.03 points per game, or sorry, 2.70 points per game last year, 5.73 this year, $4 median salary for Edwards. That is a absolutely bonkers high points per game for a guy who has one home run. I know a lot of formats, like, home runs are just one category, right? Things like that. This is a guy who's obviously, like, he's stolen 30 bases and only been caught three times. That has a huge impact on his 5x5 value. It actually helps his points value quite a bit as well, because you get points for steals and you lose points for getting caught. And when you can steal at that rate, that's huge. But this is just, this is a power hitter's game more often than not. And yeah, he has two home runs across AAA in the majors, one in the majors, one in AAA this year. He hit seven across two levels last year. He hit five the year before. He has 15 home runs in his professional career across since 2018, when he made his debut in rookie ball for the Padres. So it's sort of shocking to see somebody put up that kind of a season in this format without any power to speak of.
He's a sell high for me. I think he has a ton of hype right now, which is great, good for him. But I could probably get David Hamilton in your leagues for free. And I think he's essentially the same thing with a better lineup, but maybe less of a chance at playing time next year. Regardless, Xavier Edwards is a sell high for me. I'm sorry. A 2.1% barrel rate. I really don't want to roster that unless I'm that desperate for stolen bases, which, you know, like, in a points format, like you said, the stolen bases obviously help his points per game, but it's not an individual category that I need to chase. So with that barrel rate, I can't do it. I can't do it.
Yeah. I think he's going to have some decent value in 5x5 leagues because he will steal a million bases and he'll probably lead off a decent amount because he walks at a high rate. And so he gets it. Like, he's not even, sometimes you get these like speedy guys and you're like, why is this guy leading off? He never gets on base. Who cares that he's fast? He's not that. He does get on base. He also has a 382 BAPIP. And, you know, we talked about Ellie's almost 360 BAPIP and how that was likely to come down despite the fact that he's clearly got a high BAPIP profile. That's not Edwards. It's going to come down. And I think he'll have an above 300 BAPIP because his speed will allow him to, you know, create some infield hits and stuff like that. But like, he does not hit the ball hard. That BAPIP this year is heavily drawn up by a high line drive rate that I don't think he'll maintain. I'm with you. I think, you know, in 5x5, if you want to tell me you want to buy or at least hold, totally get it. But I think he's a sell high.
Yeah.
Moving up the Eastern Seaboard to New York, same division. Mark Vientos. Vientos is, you know, he struggled last year. You had this, like, I felt like the beginning of last year, we were like, Beatty and Vientos, they've had so many options at third base. And then it was like, oh man, these guys both suck. And then Vientos this year, 5.79 points per game. Power, not a problem for him. He's got 25 home runs. He's also only got 424 plate appearances. Like, you give this guy a full season of plate appearances, and that's, you know, over 30 home runs, pushing 35. I guess the question is, can he maintain it?
Yeah, and it's always hard for guys with a strikeout rate that's close to 30% to maintain sustained success throughout the season. But Fientos's power has been so nice. I mean, his barrel rate is absurd, just like a lot of these guys that we've been talking about today. A barrel rate at 14.2% this season. That will help, not to be a broken record here, but it really does apply to so many of these names. That will help with an inflated strikeout rate. So, like you said, 25 homers in just 424 plate appearances. I am going to buy high on Mark Vientos. I think the playing time is obviously at this point safe. I don't think Beatty's any more of a concern. His strikeout rate in the second half was something that I wanted to see here, and I have it. All right, so it's actually gone up quite a bit in the second half. It's not enough for me to change my tune, but it's something to watch. He's 25% strikeout rate in the first half. It's up to 32% in the second half. That's a pretty big difference.
And that was 32% going into today's game.
That doesn't sound promising.
So it's only four strikeouts. He only had four strikeouts today. There's not like a fifth in there or anything. Yeah, 0-for-4 with four strikeouts. That's not ideal.
Well, before that game in the second half, even with the 32% strikeout rate, a 126 WRC plus. I think the guy's just a good hitter, so I'm gonna buy.
I've gone back and forth on him. I think he hits the ball hard for sure. He made strides in his plate discipline. Like, you know, I said he was terrible last year, but this year he's chasing less. He's actually swinging less overall. He's making a little bit more contact. I really worry about that strikeout rate, and I worry a bit that what we're seeing is pitchers adjusting, because it's the second half, but it's really been, you know, since the beginning of July. Like, he had really good strikeout rates, 21.7, 23.7 in May and June, and then it's been over 30% the rest of the time. But yeah, like you said, it hasn't really hampered him from being effective. Boy, I guess I'm gonna if I have to put a stake in the ground, I'm gonna say buy. I think there's enough potential for him to make some improvements to that plate discipline. That, yeah, buy high. Brenton Doyle. I don't think we need to spend a ton of time here because we've talked about him on the show before, and I know that you love this dude.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't checked in on him in a while because the one league I had him in, I fell out of contention. That was a roto league, and I haven't really heard his name a lot since, so I'm not sure the numbers have gotten that much better. Regardless, he plays at Coors, he steals bases, he slashed his strikeout rate about 10 percentage points from last year. He has maintained a barrel rate in the double digits, so I'm going to buy high on Brenton Doyle. To go back to another point that was about outfielders, again, it's a hard position to fill, and here we have a 26-year-old in Coors who seems to be a power speed threat. I have a hard time, you know, lifting my nose at that and finding problems with it. I'm just going to bank it.
Yeah. I think if I had him, I would bank it. I think if I don't have him, I'm not comfortable buying. He's really cooled off in the last couple weeks. His second half WRC plus is 76.
I don't think it was that good in the first half, was it? I thought he was a guy who like was putting up fantasy numbers, but had a terrible WRC plus.
No, let's see. I was just looking at it. Now I just lost it. 112. And I think it's worth noting WRC plus, like WRC plus is park adjusted. And I think I think it over adjusts for Coors. And yeah, so he's probably unfairly treated by that, but it's still a 296 WOBA. And that's in the second half. It was 350 in the first half. That is not park adjusted. Right. And those are the stats you can bank. And that's not particularly good. He has, you know, he does have 7 home runs and 9 steals in the second half. And remember, the second half isn't actually half. It's less than half, and we're not done with it yet. So like that power speed combo for your 5x5 leagues is legit. And I think in those cases, I think in 5x5, I would buy high. I think in like a Fangraphs points league, in a 4x4 league, I'd sell high. I would. So
yeah, he really has set an almost impossible bar for himself. He's gonna finish, you know, 2030 with over 150 combined runs in RBI. He's already at that mark for that.
Yeah.
So expecting that going forward is a little tough.
That's the thing. To me, this is like I said, if I've got him, I'm happy to hold him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, next player, a little bit more expensive than the guys we're talking about, $9 median salary. And he's done this before in the past. Tyler O'Neill, 6.17 points per game this year. He was just 4.01 last year. Of course, everyone knows and remembers. And, you know, a few years ago, 2021, he just was insanely good. 34 home runs, 384 WOBA. The WOBA is down this year versus that year. But he's got a real shot to set a new career high in home runs despite playing less than he did in 2021. So, yeah, I mean, borderline the best year of his career. Depends on how you want to define it. But it's been, you know, we'll see if it's his only year in Boston. But, man, it was a good one.
Yeah, he's always been a streaky player. And right now he's on an 15, 18, 21... He's on a 1-for-26 stretch, and he was 0-for-5 last night with 4 strikeouts. We are recording on Saturday, September 21st. And that's just kind of the player that Tyler O'Neill is. He's when he's hot, he's awesome. The final numbers, if he stays healthy, which is very rare, will look very good, like we're seeing this year. With it being an up year for Tyler O'Neill, I'm going to say sell high. But don't be surprised if somehow he stays in the field, he ends up someplace nice next year. Maybe he's back in Boston and puts together a nice season. He's just so health dependent. It's with him coming off a hot year, I'm going to say sell high. If he was coming off a bad year, I'd say buy low. He's just that kind of player.
Yeah. And I was totally ready to be like, you know, he's leaving Boston. Who knows where he'll land? It might not be as friendly. He's been way better on the road this year. Like a lot better. He's a 339 WOBA at home, 387 on the road. So I guess for some reason, his road strikeout rate is 28%. His home strikeout rate is 39.6%. I don't know if like he can't see the ball against a green backdrop or something. I don't know what it is, but that is brutal. I am with you, though. I think that, you know, if you can sell him to somebody who's like, yeah, he's back. This is who he is. Like, he just needed to get out of St. Louis and everything's good now. He's just going to be up and down. And I'll sell at the peak. And if he has a terrible first half next year and people are like, he's a bust again and they want to cut him or dump him cheap, I'll buy at that valley. So, yeah. Another veteran who's done this before, doesn't always stay on the field, Carlos Correa. $14 median salary, 6.55 points per game, was 4.45 last year. Correa, I have a hard time putting on this list because like what he's doing this year is more in line with what he did in like 2021, 2022. He's just had a couple of down years in 2020 and 2023, and 2020 was a shortened season. So this just seems like maybe this is just, he's just a good hitter, right?
Yep, he's a buy high for me. I can't believe he's 29 years old. Holy crap. But everything under the hood looks awesome. It's just like, yeah, is he going to be able to stay healthy? And the answer to that is probably not. But when he's healthy, he's a very useful player. Middle infield is a little tough. So I'm banking on Carlos Correa in my leagues. And the price that he's at right now, he said the average salary is, I'm just looking
14.
$14. Like, that's fine. That's stomachable for Carlos Correa, even if he only ends up giving you 450 plate appearances, which, you know, he won't even reach that this year. But hopefully that was just an anomaly. Hopefully his ankle is actually fine and that was all over nothing. And he's just a good hitter. There's no question when he's on the field, he's a good hitter. So I'm in on Carlos Correa. I'll buy high at that price.
I like that $14 price. I think that his price to buy via trade in the offseason is not going to properly account for the fact that I not only worry, like he's not going to get to 90 games this year. Now he's played 135, 136 the last 2 years. We had two teams a year ago say, whoa, I don't know if I want to sign this guy after looking at his medicals. And now he's had lingering foot issues. He's missed, like, he's been on and off the field. And I'm worried it's going to get worse before it gets better, and that at some point that's going to impact his performance, right? So far, he's been a, like, when he's on the field, he's great. At some point, those injuries catch up. And even when you're on the field, you're dealing with nagging this, nagging that, and it just doesn't work. I don't want to get caught holding the bag with him. And I think that's going to happen, you know, not like immediately, but he turns 30 tomorrow, unless you're listening to this on Monday, which you would be, in which case he turned 30 yesterday. So happy birthday, Carlos. I'm selling. It's not that 30 is old or that he's done. I think he's going to age poorly and quickly because of the health. And I would rather sell high now and watch him have a great 2025 than be the one left holding the bag when the bottom falls out.
Yeah, that's fair. I think this is a case where, like, not all sell highs are equal, because all buy highs are equal. Because I think you could actually buy probably pretty low on Carlos Correa, despite him being a statistical improver from last year, if that makes sense. And I think that's maybe where my comfortability is coming from. And also, like, you know, you're probably not, even if he performs well the next couple of years, you're probably still not keeping him once he gets to like $20. So I'm viewing this as kind of a short term thing anyway.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I think you're right that I think our disagreement here is less about who Correa is right now and more about what we think the market will think he is. And I worry that the market's going to be like, yeah, he was 80 games this year or 90 games this year, but he's played 100. He's going to be 140 next year. That's what he's been in the past. He'll be back to that. And I just don't want to pay that price for him. So next guy on the list, Jordan Westberg. Westberg is, I think he's on a rehab assignment with AAA right now, but he is, you know, before the season, I honestly thought he was sort of an outsider in this Baltimore youth movement, just a placeholder kind of guy. He put up 3.52 points per game last year. He's at 5.50 this year. That's a 3.48 WOBA. He's got 18 home runs in about 100 games played. Like, he was on a solid 25 home run, 10 stolen base pace. And, you know, that's a lineup where the runs and RBIs will be plentiful. So it all looks pretty good on the surface. What do you think about Jordan Westberg?
Yeah, no, I love Westberg. I think the walk rate was actually a little low. Who knows? Maybe it's because he's having such a good year. He's just swinging a lot more because he's really feeling it, which fantasy managers should actually be okay with. Another guy who, by the way, I'm just going to keep bringing this up, is 3 years older than Ellie De La Cruz. but you're right. Love the ballpark. He is a righty, or not the ballpark, the lineup. He is a righty in that ballpark that, you know, will probably hurt his power a little bit, like it has with Mountcastle and so many other righties in that lineup. But man, the sample he gave us, that was a real shame when he went down for the season, because 91.4 mile an hour exit velocity, he was just clicking on all cylinders. So Westberg is actually a guy who, like, yeah, in long-term formats, you have to buy high, because he was a top 100 prospect who was poor and then really broke out this year. So you're going to have to buy high. But, like, you could have been buying a lot higher if he stayed healthy. So in that vein, you might be able to get him on a relative discount, and I would absolutely do that. So I'm buying high on Westberg.
Yeah, I'm with you on this. I think he's been very good. He has shown no signs of having a hard time hitting a Camden. Doesn't mean that won't creep up, but he's been really good at home, better at home than he has on the road, despite that, the, you know, being a righty in that park. I think he's, yeah, I like what I see from the plate discipline. I like what I see from his batted ball quality. I'm buying. Next on this list, this is the most random guy on the list, I think. But he made the cut, so he's on here. Jurickson Profar, also a former top prospect, but that was a long time ago. He is 31. He has this year, so his career high in games coming into this year was 152. His career high in plate appearances is 658. He's gonna set career highs in playing time this year, and he's earned it, right? He has a 368 WOBA, far and away the best year of his career. I don't know, you know, development's not linear. We talk about that all the time. Some guys, it takes them a couple years, and maybe some guys, it takes a decade. Is that what we're seeing?
You know, This is a tough one for this exercise, because saying I'm buying high on Jerickson Profar makes it seem like, you know, I'm going to meet him at his ADP next year. I expect this to repeat. Like, to me, it has those kind of connotations. So I'm going to say that I'm selling high, but I also think that Jerickson Profar is good now. Like, I think he's a very useful player. Everything kind of looks safe. You're right. He could just be a late bloomer, but kind of across the board improvement. He looks comfortable in San Diego. He's a key part of that lineup that has really good pieces around him. I'm going to say sell high, because again, he's a 31-year-old who, like, there's certain connotations that go with saying buying high, and I don't want to mislead the listeners. I'm not going into any of my leagues looking to buy high on Jerickson Profar, but I still think he's good. Like, I still think this is legit.
Yeah, I think I'm with you. I was going to call him a buy high, because my sense was that the market on him would be journeyman who had a good year, but journeyman. And if that's the case, then I'll buy. But I'm hearing you talk, I'm looking at what's happening, and I think you're right. I think people who have him right now, if they try to sell him, they're thinking sell high. They're thinking like, and I'm not paying for that. I will pay. I'm just totally agreeing with you. I think he has to be a sell high, even though I was thinking buy high, but I think you're right. I think the market's going to be too high on him. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we still have 12 names. We can do that. We can get through 12. All right. Welcome back to the Keeper Cup podcast. Chad Young, Pete Ball going through hitters who had breakout seasons. We got 12 names to get through still remaining. We're going to try to be quick on them. Tommy Edman, 4.17 points per game last year, 5.89 this year, $5 median salary. You know, going to the Dodgers helps everybody.
Yeah, this is a really weird one. I'm going to say sell high, because it just feels like this guy had a lot of time off. He should be in good shape, you know, and you're right. He went to the Dodgers, and like he's hitting for power and stuff that like he's just never done before. 29 years old. This wasn't a former top prospect or anything like that. And even with the success he's having in this incredibly small sample, the barrel rate's still just 4.5%, which suggests to me he's probably been a little bit lucky. Nothing looks different enough. So if I'm in a category league and I have him, I'm holding on to him because he's probably cheap because of all the injuries and he's going to steal me some bases. But I'm absolutely not buying high. And if I can sell high, if somebody believes in this small sample, I will gladly sell high on Tommy Edman.
100%. He is the same player he has been. The results are noise. His max EV is a career low. His barrel rate is down. His exit velocity is down. Like, I don't know how he has those six home runs. I'm selling. Jock Peterson. Arizona has been, everybody in Arizona is hitting right now, but Jock's been hitting sort of all year. He's been really good in the past. This is still going to be a career high for him in WOBA unless things go really, really south very quickly. I've always been a Jock fan, and so I always like having him on my rosters because you can just slot him in against righties and watch him destroy them and then bench him against lefties. But I don't know if this has moved his, this may move his price too high for me.
This is why this exercise is so tough, because obviously I believe what Jock Peterson is doing against righties. Like, it's legit. He's done it for a lot of his career. He hits the ball incredibly hard. The barrel rate looks great. He's increased his walk rate dramatically the last 2 years. Well, I mean, it's down compared to last year, but he was at 9.7% in 2022, 8.1% the year before that, 8% the year before that. He had 13.4% last year, 12.6% this year. He's just more comfortable at the plate than he's ever been before. But at the same time, you know, he's going to be 33 years old. And if people are going to charge me the moon, if I'm going to quote buy high on him, I have a hard time doing that. So I will sell high if I can.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think this may be another case where you and I are expecting different things from the market, which is I think that the market is going to be ready to sell on him. And so I will buy. I'm going to call him a buy high because I think that people will sell him for a price that overweights what he did last year and overweights his age. and the fact that he's a platoon bat. Like, there's all these negatives, and I think it's going to hurt his value. And so I will be buying it when I perceive his value will be. But you're absolutely right that if somebody's looking at his line and is like, 393 WOBA, this guy is, you know, one of the best hitters in baseball, you're going to have to pay for it. I'm out at that price for sure. All right, next on this list, Ezekiel Tofar, another guy we have talked about before on this show.
A lot.
Yeah, and he's gone from 3.97 points per game last year to 5.08 this year. And we talked about it last year. He was showing some real signs. It just wasn't coming together. This year, it's coming together. I still think that he has another gear if he can improve his strikeout rate, and I think he can. And so I'm buying. I'm buying on Tovar.
Yeah, another guy who is older than Ellie De La Cruz. I want to say I'm buying because he's a young player with a lot of pedigree, shortstop, Coors Field. I obviously see the appeal, but the walk rate somehow went down from last year and the strikeout rate went up. That is not the direction we want to see those things go. As a matter of fact, since he debuted at 20 years old, his walk rate has gone down each season and his strikeout rate has gone up each season. So even though the fantasy numbers of home runs and stolen bases still look okay, he stole less bases this season, but he's obviously hitting for more power. I don't want to buy. I think there's too many good young shortstops in the game for me to buy high on Ezekiel Tovar at this point. Like, I want to see something first.
Speaking of good young shortstops, we got a slightly less young 27-year-old Tyler Fitzgerald for the Giants, same division. Fitzgerald last year was 4.16 points per game. This year, 5.25. He's a $5 median salary. Are you buying in on what Tyler Fitzgerald's done this year?
Nope. Sell high. 31% strikeout rate. No pedigree there. As good as he's been, the barrel rate's still just 7.3%. I'm selling.
Yeah. I wanted to be able to buy because I've got him on a couple teams. He's been great for me. And then as soon as I looked at any of the numbers, I was like, nah, I'm out. Yeah. I'll be selling high if I can. Another shortstop going a little bit older. Willy Adames, 29 years old. 5.58 points per game this year, 4.51 last year. $12 median salary. For Adames, this is, to me, for Adames, this feels like a lot of things coming together that just haven't in the past. He's had power seasons like this in the past, but his BAPIP has failed him, and he's had good BAPIP seasons where there wasn't quite as much power, and his strikeout rate would spike up, and then his walk rate would come down. He's just sort of like fluctuated around, but if you look at all these things, his walk rate at 10.8% is not out of line. You know, two of the last 3 years, he was at 10.3 and 11.1. His 25.6% strikeout rate is a little bit better than it's been the last couple of years, but not crazily. So it's not like some outlier. His 292 BAPIP is lower than his career BAPIP, but very much sort of in line with what you'd expect. His home run per fly ball rate is sort of right where you'd expect it to be. His max EV is actually up almost to a career high, but it's higher than it's been since 2021. His average exit velocity is sort of where it's been. His hard hit rate is sort of where it's been. His barrel rate is great, like it always is. Like, it just, this all just looks like Willy Adames doing all the things he's always done all at once. And I've always been a fan of Willy Adames. So I think I'm still just buying.
Yeah, I'm going to sell, and it's more of a strategy thing. Again, shortstop, such a deep position. And as much as it is, like, I agree with you, I think he's good, and it looks like everything has come together. Took a long time for everything to come together. What are the chances he's able to repeat that? And so if I have somebody in my league who's like, man, the RBI numbers are out of control, this guy went 30-20, you know, we've seen this before, he's a good player, I'm going to buy high on that. I'll just happily sell because I'm confident in my ability to find a replacement, and I'm not confident I'm going to get 30-20 out of Willy Adames again.
Yeah. Next guy on our list, Teoscar Hernandez. Teoscar is 5.79 points per game this year, 4.76 last year, $16 median salary. So a lot more expensive than most of the other guys we've been talking about. He is not quite going to get to career highs in sort of plate appearances or games. He has a shot at a career high in home runs. He right now just sort of looks like he went to Seattle for a year and wishes he didn't.
I'm actually going to sell high. He signed a one-year contract with the Dodgers. I think going to the Dodgers was obviously just a great decision for him, particularly financially. I think he's going to get paid. But when you look at the entire picture, we're talking about a guy who's going to be 32 years old, leaving the Dodgers, coming off a career season with a career strikeout rate of 30%. So looking at the full picture, I will sell high.
Agreed. This is another one where I think that people are going to be, I think people are going to, the narrative I gave at the beginning, like, oh, he went to Seattle for a year, that sucked for him, but this is who he is. I'll sell at that price for sure. Yeah. I'll sell at that price. The oldest player we're going to talk about, I think, if I'm wrong, I apologize. Salvador Perez, a 34-year-old catcher.
Salvi, I already know what you're doing.
5.27 points per game this year. He was 4.3 last year. $7 median salary. This guy, what is so weird about this guy is like he was a good hitter early in his career, like very early, at 21, 22 years old. And then from like 24 to 28 years old, which should theoretically be like prime years, he had a 308 wOBA over that stretch. Now, being a catcher is hard. I get that. But like he had this reputation as this great offensive player because he had for decent power. He's never been a great offensive player except for like a couple of seasons in there, and this is as good as he's been. I mean, this is like, I would argue this has been his second best season of his career at 34 years old. And so, yeah, 34-year-old catcher putting up arguably the best, one of the best seasons of his career, I'll sell.
When you put it that way, this makes me seem like a psychopath. I'm gonna buy high on Salvador Perez. I just think he's going to have catcher eligibility next year, and I think he's going to be catching less and less games going forward, which is what we want. We want him DHing more. And, you know, this is his best strikeout rate since 2019 or 2018, best strikeout rate since 2018, and he more than doubled his walk rate. Like, where the heck did a 7% walk rate come from for Salvador Perez? He's gone from a terrible on-base guy to, like, a pretty average 7%. Like that's not that bad. So he still hits the ball hard. He's barreling it more than he has since 2021. I'm gonna, for a couple of years here, I'll ride this out as he gets more looks at DH, and I will actually buy Salvador Perez. I also think we're looking at maybe the best lineups he's ever hit in, and this guy's played for World Series champions, and I think that matters.
No, it does, and it is the best lineup he's ever played in. That's all totally fair. Byron Buxton, not quite as old, not quite as healthy, but Buxton is bounced back in a big way. Like last year, he wasn't hitting. Beginning of this year, he really wasn't either. He's at 96 games. He should get to triple digits, assuming he doesn't get hurt this week. Wow. He should get to triple digits for just the second time in his career. He is not going to get to 400 plate appearances for the second time in his career, though. But he could get 200 games played. I don't even know if he's a buy high or a sell high because I just have no sense whatsoever what his value is. Where are you on Buxton?
Yeah, look, I'm going to continue to play the game down the middle. If it's buy high or sell high, I am selling high on Byron Buxton. He's been hit by a pitch more times this year than he ever has been before in his career. Dude, what are you doing? Get the hell out of the way. Like, I am 100% selling high on Byron Buxton. I do not deny the talent. If you told me guaranteed Byron Buxton 140 games next year, I'm buying high. I'm buying real high. I might take him in drafts in the fourth round if you told me he's going to play 140 games. But he's not going to. So I'm going to sell high.
Yeah. I'm with you. I think it's the same. If you can buy him from someone who's like, look, he's going to play 90 games. We both know he's going to play 90 games. Buy. I'll buy at that. But
that's not buying high. Yeah, that's not buying high. That's buying a fair price.
If I have to buy high or sell high, I would rather sell than buy at that point. Yeah. Stephen Kwan, 5.48 points per game this year, 4.82 last year, $8 median salary. I'm not going to say anything. I'll let you go first. What are you doing with Stephen Kwan?
If I'm in a league that counts hitter strikeouts, I will buy high on Stephen Kwan. Otherwise, I'm selling high.
I'm going to buy high. He was a legitimate MVP candidate level player at the beginning of this season before he had some injury issues. And I think he never really recovered from that. And I think if he doesn't have that issue, I think he has another gear still. So yeah, I'm going to buy high on Kwan because I think most people are going to look at him and be like, hey, end of the day, this year and his rookie season look pretty similar, just with more power this year. And if you want to sell me his rookie season with a little more power, I think there's more there. So I will buy high on Stephen Kwan, but I get why you're selling. Alec Bohm, another, you know, sort of middling power, get on base kind of guy. He's helped quite a few of my teams this year. What are you doing with him?
Oh, I bet he has. He has been incredible this year. He's a guy I totally just whiffed on. I have him in 0 of 17 leagues. I'm going to buy high. The plate discipline's pretty good. You know, he doesn't strike out. Everything under the hood looks good. The offense is incredible. It's a great place to hit. He was a top 10 prospect in baseball. This is another guy who's maybe just a late bloomer, not as late as Jurickson and Profar. But nevertheless, he's putting together a pretty awesome season. He's not going to light it up in categories leagues, but in points leagues, I feel pretty good about Alec Bohm.
Yeah, I'm with you. He walks a decent amount, enough, not a ton, but enough. He doesn't strike out. He puts the ball in play. He increased his exit velocity this year back to where it was a couple of years ago. His hard hit rate has been going up for a couple of years. I just think he's generally, like, what he's done this year is sort of who he is. And I think that the price on him will be something like, you know, yeah, he had a career year this year and, you know, we know, but I don't know. I think it'll be more like he had a career year. We all expect some regression, and I don't know that I expect regression. So I'm willing to pay at this price.
Agreed.
Next on the list, we're down to our last two. Matt Chapman. For a moment, I was worried. I had said Salvi was our oldest player on the list. I thought Chapman might have been it, but he's not. He's only 31. Yeah. Chapman having a solid year for the Giants. I'm sort of surprised to see that he went from 4.79 points per game last year to 5.28. That's a pretty sizable jump for a guy whose numbers look pretty similar.
Yeah, the one jump is the stolen bases out of nowhere. 15 stolen bases. I won't lie. I had no idea until I saw this because I don't have him in any leagues just like Alec Bohm. Oddly enough, this is going to be a weird one for me. I'm going to buy high on Matt Chapman. He has always punished the baseball. He's continuing to do that this season. I like that he's added the stolen base element to his game. We'll see if it sticks or not. He was only caught twice, though. But he signed that extension with the Giants, and that was kind of, it felt weird, kind of felt out of nowhere. I think there's a level of comfortability there. I think he's happy where he's at, and I put stock in that. So I will buy high on Matt Chapman at third base, a position which very recently was one of concern. So sure, I'll take Chapman.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I think, you know, the other thing that helps a little bit is that bad park seems like it should be a problem, but he did just fine in Oakland for years. And I think,
yeah, good point.
I think the stolen bases is a combination of org philosophy. And I think and you know, him deciding to steal more. And I also think that he probably just wants to be on the West Coast. Like, I don't know, you know, he clearly made a choice to go back there. He's made an active choice to stay there. And that's just sort of my sense is that, you know, like you said, he's comfortable there. It was a return home, even though it's the other side of the bay. And so, yeah, I'm with you. I think that matters. Finally, another Matt Wallner, the guy who, the reason we only required 0.45 points per game increase instead of 0.5 is because he's 0.48 from 4.96 to 5.44. He has a $3 median salary. I have Matt Wallner on multiple teams. I am very much a fan of Matt Wallner. He is fun to watch. He hits the ball extremely hard. He has now, over the last two seasons, given us 500 plate appearances of a 382 WOBA with 27 home runs and a 34.2% strikeout rate and a 357 BABIP. This is not a profile that is consistently successful. It's the Tyler O'Neill profile. I was really thinking this year, I was like, oh, he'll improve that strikeout rate. And no, that's not what's happened. Not even a little bit. His strikeout rate has gotten worse this year. Now, part of that is he had a horrific start to the year and ended up getting sent down. Since he came back, July 7th is when he came back, his strikeout rate is still 34.7%, which is still higher than it was last year and still not good enough. I want to say bye high. I want to believe. I will still have Walner on some of my teams. I will still grab Walner if there's places where his price stays low. I think you can sell Matt Walner in a lot of places as if he is a, you know, $15, $20, $25 even guy. And I think there is a real chance the bottom just drops way out. Like, since he's come back, right, where he's been in this incredible stretch of 170 WRC plus, he's been insane. He has a 34.7% strikeout at a 410 BABIP over that stretch. I think you find the person in your league who's like, this guy is a superstar, and you make him pay for him as a superstar, and you take that profit while you can.
Yeah. You know, I'm going to sound like I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth, because there's been a couple of guys we've gone over today who had strikeout rates around 30% that I was like, they can live with that because of X, Y, and Z. But a 37% strikeout rate, that's different than a 29% strikeout rate. That is significantly worse with a player who has like no track record. So I get he hits the ball hard, and maybe in leagues where I need a fifth outfielder and I'm short on power, he kind of easily fits that mold. I still can't call him a buy high. So if I have to pick, I'm going to sell high.
Got it. Well, so let's do a quick recap here. There are, let's see, we said went through 29 guys. Of those 29, 11 of them we agreed were buy highs. Jackson Churio, Jackson Merrill, James Wood, Luis Angel Acuna, Elliot Ramos, Mark Vientos, Jordan Westberg. Oh, we skipped one here. We never talked about Spencer Horwitz. You want to give a quick thought on Spencer Horwitz?
Quick thought on Spencer Horwitz is I don't know a whole lot about Spencer Horwitz other than he's had one or two incredible games. My gut tells me, and I'm pulling up the StatCast page now because I remember that, yeah, he walks quite a bit, but the average exit velocity, the barrel rate, not enough to blow my socks off. I don't know what his position eligibility is going to be next year. I know he had quite a few positions on ESPN that helped, but if I have somebody who comes to me and is like, hey, I want to buy your Spencer Horwitz, I'm listening. So I'm going to call him a sell high.
All right. I'm going to call him a buy high. I think that he the play discipline's really good. I think he does enough in the multiple positions. I'm interested in having him on my roster. So now we've done 29 guys. And of those 29 guys, we have had, I think, 10 that we agreed are buy highs. Those 10 are Jackson Churio, Jackson Merrill, James Wood, Luis Angel Acuna, Elliot Ramos, Mark Vientos, Jordan Westberg, Ellie De La Cruz, Alec Bohm, and Matt Chapman. At the other end of the list, we've got 9 that we agree are sell highs. Adrian Del Castillo, Xavier Edwards, Tyler O'Neill, Jurickson Profar, Tommy Edman, Tyler Fitzgerald, Teoscar Hernandez, Byron Buxton, and Matt Wallner. And then of the others in that middle group, your guys that you were going to buy and that I said sell were Lawrence Butler, Brenton Doyle, Carlos Correa, and Salvi Perez. The guy that you said sell and I, the guys that you said sell and I said buy are Spencer Horwitz, Connor Norby, Jock Peterson, Ezekiel Tovar, Willy Adames, and Stephen Kwan. I was slightly more optimistic than you overall, but pretty even. So, yeah. Any final thoughts on that?
Well, keep in mind, I'm a Boston fan, so the fact that I was more negative than you should be the least surprising thing of this exercise. I think this should be helpful for folks because these are the types of players that are often the most difficult decisions. You know, the balloon seasons the guys have, and are they actually worth their price or not? So hopefully this was helpful.
Yeah, I hope it was. I'm gonna try to remember to track these, and maybe we'll come back to it in the spring and look at like how accurate were we about what the prices on these guys would be, and then we can track it through the season and see who made the right call, who didn't.
Love it.
Yeah, thank you all for listening, and we will be back with you next week.